Michael Bryan, you're a total laughing stock, aren't you?
I've been a laughing stock for 22 years now.
And are you as big of a laughing stock as you'd like to be?
Not half as big as a laughing stock as I'd like to be.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 300, Total Laughingstock. Wait, 300? Really? Cool.
Hey, Reed, can I tell the people about all the stuff I brought?
Absolutely.
Well, I just thought, you know, with this being like radio, that I should bring in some sound effects and other stuff to help.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah, sure. So I brought this synthesizer. This can help with music and different sound effects. And I got this drum machine. The drum machine is particularly good for rim shots so that people know the jokes are funny. Check it out.
Excellent.
Yeah, idea. Yeah. That's but, you know, this newfangled digital stuff is just too darned easy. So I brought along some good old-fashioned organic sound effects as well.
Oh, that's what this pile is.
That's what it is. Right, Austin. Very check nice it out. Stuff. See? Pots, pans, fruits, vegetables.
Cool. I can use this.
Some power tools. They're always good. Tiny little animal.
Do we have room for all this in here?
Well, sure we do. Sure we do. See, I figure that every episode we could have, like, a special sound effect of the day, and then we can use that sound effect throughout the show.
Like how?
Well, like, for instance, okay, today's sound effect of the day is a hammer hitting a head of lettuce.
And what does that sound like?
Like this.
It's not really much of a sound effect, is it? What would you use it for?
Well, I don't know. Well, maybe like, when listeners hear it, they could call in and win a prize.
Like what?
I don't know. How about one of these?
Oh, wow, that is so cool.
What is that?
I don't know, but I think it's great. Look what it does.
Whoa, that is amazing.
I know.
And do those things detach?
They detach,
well, that's
yep. They come right off.
Oh man, it broke.
No, I think it's supposed to
it
do
It is
that.
Supposed to. See, now look what happens if you plug it in.
During our final week in London this summer, Reed Martin and I spoke with Mike O'Brien, owner and co-founder of Laughing Stock Productions, a record label dedicated to the art of audio comedy and the producer and distributor of our six-part BBC World Service production, The Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show, an excerpt of which you just heard, and the original cast soundtrack album of The Complete Millennium Musical Abridged. In a private showbiz club on Shaftesbury Avenue in London, as the bells of St. Anne's tolled in the background, Reed and I sat down with Mike, who told us the history of Laughing Stock.
We started in 1991. We were quite lucky in that we signed Bill Hicks as our first artist. Second was Eddie Izzard, and then Ross Noble, and a recent acquisition, I guess, or signing, it would be Tim Minchin. Mm. But no, we've
that's quite a range. Yeah, of good people. Oh, and somewhere along the lines, the Reduced Shakespeare something.
The biggest act ever.
I was just about to come on to that. Association with the Reduced Shakespeare Company came about with BBC World Service. We're looking for commissions, we're looking for funny radio. And through somebody else, we met the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Mm-hmm. The Shakespeare show was in the West End and happening. And we thought, can we turn this part into a six-part half-hour radio show? Got together, the guys worked together, flew over, and we recorded it in a week or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, it seemed like it was 3 or 4 days, down near Battersea Power Station, I remember.
Right?
That's right. Making up sound effects for the... doing rap songs. It was the most enjoyable production we ever did. And astonishingly, the BBC World Service bought it. Its first premiere was in Nigeria. Followed by Somalia, Mozambique, South Africa. And then moved on to India and the Philippines. But it was a big hit for the World Service. Nobody knew what it was about, especially in Nigeria and Somalia. But they loved it because they could hear the humor in it.
Well, and nobody, that was the thing we keep talking about. They just said, they told you, and you told us, just go write it and do it. And nobody ever checked it, reviewed it, thought to look at it.
There was a wonderful commissioning editor called Tim Dean, and this was back in the days when the BBC was a creative force in radio. It wasn't run by accountants, and the PC Brigade weren't running it. And Tim had seen the show. He knew that it would be good, but there was no... virtually. I mean, it was a good job was done on it. The show was delivered to it. You listened to it and broadcast it.
Yeah.
These days, I've recently produced a show for BBC. I mean, the longest part of it was actually the compliance, checking through all the stuff with no references we made to this, to that.
Wow.
That was the longest part of it, and that was the beauty of the BBC going back 50 years, really. But I mean, it finished around about the end of the 90s, where all this compliance stuff came in. But that show was great fun to make.
And I think it
we got it under the wire.
Well, it holds up, you know. I go back and listen to it, and I, you know, I don't go back very often, but I went back and listened to a couple of the episodes. I go, sometimes I go back to something we do, and I go, oh, yeah, okay. It still makes me laugh. I'm still surprised, and it tickles me.
Well, I was realizing there's a theme. There's a theme in my work, because in the sports show, I lose an arm. In the radio show, I lost my entire head. And that's one of the things that I go back, yeah, I'd like another go at that, because I think I overacted it. I like the way I play the arm loss better.
And the sound effects as well, because the stage show is so visual, so you have to recreate your head falling off your, falling off your shoulder. And that was the fun of it, which I think, at any rate, a situation, you can create any scenario you like, but you've got to have that oral sound to it. It gives it that reality. And for anybody interested, it is available on iTunes and and is also still repeated by the BBC digital station to this day.
And it's presumably it's still available on CD.
Yes, it is.
Well, and how has iTunes and the digital environment changed your business?
Completely and utterly.
Oh, right.
Completely and utterly. I mean, our sales ratio, CD to, say, iTunes or digital, is probably, CD sales might be 1 in 10.
Okay.
And it's getting less. A lot of the CD retailers are closing down because they can't, because people can go online, they can now buy DVD, feature films, TV episodes, obviously audio things, straight to their Macs or their iPads.
Right.
So sadly, when I say it's available, it is available, but it would be difficult to actually go into it to find a record shop to buy it.
Yeah,
but it is. But it sounds just as good on iTunes as it does on CD.
Well, it does, and you don't. We've been, and they're very popular items when we sell them live at our shows, because we sell them as a 3-box set
and the packaging, with the pictures and the sleeve notes and all that sort of.
Yeah.
iTunes is the basic info you get on iTunes. It's nothing like going back to the 60s with a lovely vinyl thing you can open out. But that's sadly. That's all Steve Jobs' fault, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yes, we blame him.
Yeah.
Now, how many artists do you have in Lightning Strike? I mean, how many titles?
About 30 or 40 at any one time. If anyone's interested, the website address is www.laughingstock.co.uk. You say contemporary artists, Tim Minchin, Eddie Izzard, going back, we've got Peter Cook and Dudley Moore from the early 60s, we've got the original Goon, we've got some Goon show stuff. A lot of kind of obscure artists, certainly for an American audience, that you wouldn't have heard of, that are very good. A lot of American, Dom Herrera's on there.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Bill Hicks, not Doug Stanhope, Mitch Hedberg, people
okay.
like
that. Oh, yeah.
We tend to go for the people that we like and are funny and think about comedy. Off the top of my head, I can't reel off the third
I'm trying
artists,
to remember. But Mark look. Thomas?
Mark Thomas.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark Steele.
Yeah.
A lot of we do a lot of left-wing artists who don't want to sign to the major corporations. That's been our appeal. A lot of artists will come to us with recordings they've made themselves, and if they're of good quality, then we will distribute for them.
Yeah.
A lot of the times we go out and we'll record an artist and put the shows up on iTunes for them. Very happy with it's it's an easy website to find. Have a look. I'm sure you'll find something in there you like.
Well, it sounds like it's the greatest one of the greatest fun jobs, in that you get to. It's like being a DJ. Yeah, here are these guys I like. Come on, people, here are their CDs.
Go on, fine. Yeah,
that's exactly it. And it's a small label, but the turnover of listens and downloads is good, and it keeps us going. It's and if somebody only sells one download a week, that's fine, because somebody like Tim Minchin will do maybe 500 or something like that. So the bigger artists are supporting the smaller artists, so to speak.
And do you do videos as well, or just audio recordings?
We've done some DVDs. We've done got Bill Hicks, The One Night Stand, Mark Steele, Gina Yashere, who's a British comedian, does working a lot in America. Probably only about five. John Shuttleworth, who's a cult English comedian.
And you said that some people come to you with their recordings, but do you also, you look for commissions from the BBC or whoever, and but do you also produce your own things and then say to the BBC, I've got this album, I'm releasing this album, but do you want to air it?
That's exactly what we do. There's a digital BBC station called Radio 4 Extra. And they, because they're digital, they are not so restricted in their content, so they do license a lot of live stand-up comedy from us. A lot of American stuff, a lot of British stuff, and that is a. And if and occasionally they commission something, we're very happy to go out and record it. But our main licensing stuff to them is live stand-up, as opposed to radio shows scripted and edited. It's basically a guy, you know, screaming into a microphone for 30 minutes.
But there are other production companies that do radio, drama. That's huge here. I mean, our joke is that we love radio because that's where the big money is. But we do love radio for all the things you were talking about. You know, you can create whatever world you want to create, and it's really fun. But it isn't, even here where there's so much of it, it's not the place to get rich, is it?
No.
All right, so let that be a warning, kids.
Absolutely. The BBC, they still do, and I think, in a way, rightly, say, to have something produced and broadcast on the BBC is kind of, you know, reward enough. Reward enough. So they'll pay for the production. You'll make a small profit, but you'll be broadcast on the BBC. And they're still very much trading on that thing. And it's a kind of take it or leave it. So the production companies have just cut their budgets and things to the... A bit like theatre, you just cut your budgets to what can be earned from it. But it's radio over here is still very healthy, BBC radio. It's not as exciting as it might have been back in the 60s, but it's still a good place to tune into.
Or even, as it sounds like, maybe in the 90s,
Or even in the 90s, exactly. Yeah. There's been a few scandals with Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand on a radio show. Right.
And how could they do that to Manuel? How could they? He's from Barcelona. Ignore him.
Unfortunately, it brought this thing in called compliance now, where the radio, the producers have to hear something and check scripts and read them before they're broadcast. So it's a bit. It was a bit sad. So a lot of the anarchy has gone out of it.
Yeah.
So it has become safer. But as I say, the digital stations and BBC 4 Extra, we're still broadcasting our quite explicit comedy and quite outrageous content.
Hello, I'm Adrian Scarborough, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? On September 29th, we begin our fall 2012 tour of the United States, taking the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged to Valhalla, Hamilton, and Ithaca, New York, Cranston, Rhode Island, Morristown, New Jersey, Chico and Saratoga, California, and Hilton Head, South Carolina. And then we take The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged to Reston, Virginia, Charlotte, North Carolina, Fort Worth, Texas, St. Louis, Missouri, Anchorage, Alaska, and for 3 weeks... we'll be at the San Diego Repertory Theater in San Diego, California. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to our conversation with Mike O'Brien from Laughingstock, who in a minute, with just a tiny amount of coaxing, will tell us about the other cool project he's involved with.
Is it easy to deal with iTunes? With speaking of Steve Jobs killing everything, are they easy to deal with, or is it just it's all electronic? You never talk to anybody, you never see anybody.
They are a remarkably democratic company. You can't hype anything on iTunes. In other words, they'll put something up there, and whether it sells one copy a year or 10,000 a day, it doesn't get any, they have a chart, so if something is in the top 10, they've got a panel at the top which shows the top right. 10 things. Everybody is paid equally. They take a percentage like any other, so they're basically a retailer as opposed to a distributor, as opposed to a producer. Yeah. I believe they're easy to get in touch with. The beauty of it, when we were producing CDs, you've got to physically make a piece of plastic, two pieces of plastic, insert paper into it, stick it onto a truck, send it up to a retailer. 3 months later, that retailer can send all of those copies back to you. So it's a very un-green way of doing business for a start. The beauty of iTunes as well is that shop can be viewed and purchased from anywhere in the world, any time of day, any day of the week, and that is the. So when we first launched, we just put the whole Eddie Izzard catalogue up there. There was no comedy page, there was no promotion, and it just took off like. And so people were just obviously going onto iTunes on the off chance and putting Eddie's name onto it.
Yeah.
Thing came up and buying it. So it has been, as I say, with the retailers not stocking much comedy anymore, iTunes have really saved a lot of careers and a lot of a lot of companies.
That's cool.
Income.
Yeah. So now.
Oh, so
do you
now?
Are you interested in?
Will you tell our listeners about your new project?
Do you want to talk about that? First, do you want to?
I can do.
That would be great.
Let's keep it in the context of a project. But there was
Fortunately, nobody listens to the Reduced Shakespeare Comedy podcast, so your secret is safe with us.
Okay. Back in the early 60s, you can look all these up online, there was a comedian called Peter Cook, and he started a comedy club or a nightclub in Soho called The Establishment. The Establishment Club, the primary reason for opening it is that the censorship in the early 60s was so strong. They had a Lord Chamberlain who would check every film, every radio broadcast, anything that was put out to the public had to be approved by him. Lady Chatterley's Lover, as you know, was banned. There was a lot of censorship. However, a private members club was the only way that, for instance, sex shows or cinema shows or things like that. So Peter Cook launched the Establishment Club in 1961. And invited his friend Dudley Moore, who had a jazz trio, to do the music. Invited people you would have heard of, Lenny Bruce, who came over here and played the Establishment Club. Frankie Howard, who was an old British comedian whose career was going down the tube. Peter brought him back in, relaunched his career. Barry Humphreys, you may not have heard of, but who had just come over from Australia. He's now a character called Dame Edna Everidge.
Sure.
He started at the Establishment Club. The club ran for about, it was in the middle of Soho, which was basically a gangster red light strip area.
Still is, sort of.
And still is. Slightly more upmarket gangsters and strip areas. The gangsters came out and tried to demand protection money off Peter. He'd just come down from Cambridge, so he looked down his nose and told him to bugger off. They never came back again. But from the establishment, from that club, they put with Alan Bennett and Jonathan Miller and Dudley Moore, they started a little review called Beyond the Fringe, which ran in London for 12 months, and then over to Broadway, where it ran on Broadway for about, and I think people like Jackie and Jack Kennedy came to see the show. It was a big hit on Broadway. Peter then came back and he started his career with Dudley Moore. And Dudley later on, of course, went on to Hollywood and became a massive star. Peter died sadly in 1995. Before he died, he was very keen to reopen the Establishment Club along the same principles, on the basis and because of the fact that British comedy and British television has unfortunately become very safe again. Comedy is good, but it's not as challenging as it was even during the 80s or the 90s. Lynn met up with a friend of mine called Victor Lewis Smith, who is a satirist, TV...
Lynn is Peter's widow, yeah.
That's right. Lynn met with Victor Lewis Smith, who is a TV producer and satirist, and his friend Keith Allen. Again, you could Google Keith Allen. He's been in the British comedy, film, television business for the last 20 years. and myself, and we came up with the idea of relaunching this thing as a private members club, and but also to have an online version, in other words, a virtual club.
Yeah.
So that the performances would be streamed as opposed to downloaded at the time that they go out to a membership audience who would pay a subscription to it for as long as they wanted to. We had to find a venue. We went to a club called Ronnie Scott's, which is a very famous jazz club in Soho, and they very kindly offered us late night shows at Ronnie's to do what are called pop-ups, in other words, sort of launch shows over the next few months. And eventually we want to buy or lease the original venue that Peter Cook had in Soho, which has now got a different name, but it's still there. It's got its own license. And to launch the virtual and the real establishment club again, and to feature a bit like Laughing Stock, a bit like Peter Cook's artists who are funny but aren't following the sort of the TV career. You just want to get onto a panel show to appear at advertisement, make a fortune and retire to a golf course, which is seems to be the comedy part.
Well, then we don't qualify.
Yes, yeah. No, I was going to say. But the reduced Shakespeare, of course, would be very welcome at our club. It's, I have to emphasise, it's a project in progress at the moment. That's the idea, and if everything goes to plan, that's what will happen. Hopefully you might be reading about it or hearing about it in the next few months.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your new comedy projects via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, crying broth Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Marissa Christina. No reason. It is just random. Special thanks to Adrian Scarborough, who's in the third episode of the seventh series or season of Doctor Who called A Town Called Mercy. And to Mike O'Brien. Check out Laughingstock's complete catalog online at laughingstock.co.uk and at iTunes. You can find our Reduced Shakespeare Company radio show and the soundtrack for the Complete Millennium musical Abridged, and hopefully a new audio product sometime in 2013. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 309/900 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Listen, you guys, since we're being so so honest, I should tell you that my father had a prosthetic head.
A prosthetic head?
Yeah, and that's not the worst part.
What is the worst part?
It's hereditary.
You mean?
Yeah. I've got a prosthetic head, too.
You do not.
Yes, I do.
That's impossible,
Austin. What do you mean? What are you talking about?
You can't have a genetic prosthetic head.
Well, what do you mean? What about your stupid, stuttering father?
Hey, that's true, man, so back off.
Prove it.
You prove it.
Fine, I'll prove it. You don't believe me, I will show you. You know how painful it's been to live my whole life with this secret? Especially during P.E. class? Taking a hit and always worrying that my head would fly off during a game? No more secrets, man. No more lies.
Austin, what are you doing?
No, fine. No. I warned you. You wouldn't believe me. I guess you'll believe me now. Look at it. I come to you with my head in my hands. Hey, Reed, catch.
Oh, my God.
I'm feeling a little lightheaded. Get it? A little lightheaded.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.